Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
It's a nasty cut on your neck.
Oh, yeah, I was almost decapitated by a very large printer. It's a long story. Sorry, I'm late.
Action packed, Pee-wee. This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 599 for the week of January 26, 2026. I am Hitman keeping a low profile in a Porsche, David T. Cole. And I'm here with cagey bastard, Sarah D. Bunting.
That's not a Porsche, that's my wife.
Her dead wife, Tar Ariano.
You just miss me so much.
And mobbed up pool cleaner, Dan Casino.
Hey, I'm skimming here.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Before we get into the episode, just a reminder, it is the end of the month, and that's when we remind you to join the Extra Hot Great Club. If you're a new listener, the main show might seem like a lot of entertainment each week, and it is, but if you join the Extra Hot Great Club for just $5 a month, you get so much more, including, but not limited to, access to our Discord server where various special perks live exclusively, discounts on our merch, an ad-free version of the main show, and a big bonus episode every week. There is a lot of TV, and we can't go deep on every show in Wednesday episodes, which is why we have the Friday show. So if you wondered why we never touched on things like A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, The Bear, A Man on the Inside, Death by Lightning, or Slow Horses, to name just a few, that's because we covered them in the bonus show, which is usually as long as the main show, often longer, features segments like Ask EHG, The Tiny Cannon, a lot more. We're going to be talking about Wonder Man this week. And when we say we can't make the main show without our paid subscribers, it might sound hyperbolic, but it is literally true. Ads you hear on the podcast get us fractions of a fraction of a cent per listen. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I'm in a lot of podcast Patreons. I would put the value our supporters get up against any of them. The fact that we've never taken a Friday off and never will is something that we're especially proud of. And speaking of those other perks, Dave, did you want to give that update?
Yes. Sometime last year, we hit the milestone that produces the one-off episode Drunk Dave Call-In Show. That happened in November, and it is January. I had plans to sort of do it over the holidays, but then the holidays came. I'm like, oh yeah, holidays are for me. Mm-hmm. Plus other stuff happened.
Holidays are for you to work on another project.
Yeah, well, intensely. That's true too. Anyways, I just want to say it is still happening. The format is going to be, you can call in and just watch, but you also can call in and ask a question. But then after you ask your question, I will pitch you a tiny cannon. And those tiny cannons will get progressively terrible and more drunk as the episode goes on. So I have 7 to 10 of those lined up. So that's going to be the show. I will post dates and details soon. I don't know how it's going to work with who's going to be pitched. It might just be random on whoever's on the Zoom at the time. So it is still happening. It is coming. And I have a plan, which I'm sure will go very well day of.
Which will last about 12 minutes. Yep.
And that will be recorded for people who were not able to watch live, right? Yes.
Yeah, I'll try to do a video somehow too and get it somewhere, but no promises.
All right. If you don't have $5 a month to spare, it is also great for you to recommend us to people in your life that you think will like the show and or give us a nice rating in your podcast app. A nice rating and review. But if you do have that extra $5 a month, we would love for you to go to extrahotgreat.com/club and throw it our way. Thank you for your patience. And now, he is a writer, professor, and game creator you have heard with us many times before. It's Dan Casino.
Mr. Dan Casino, welcome back.
I really appreciate having me back after last week's game time. I know you invited me beforehand, but I appreciate it.
No, that was a joy.
Yeah, that was great.
I was against. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, okay.
I lobbied hard.
We are here to talk about Memory of a Killer, in which Angelo Flannery, Patrick Dempsey, is a photocopier salesman and widower in Hudson Springs, New York, very attentive to his pregnant daughter, Maria Odea Rush, in the last weeks of her first pregnancy, Why would Fox make a show about a normie like him? Well, because Angelo is actually a hitman. But don't worry, he only kills bad guys, he says. Angelo is also a frequent visitor to his brother Michael, Richard Clarkin, who lives in a memory care residence due to early onset Alzheimer's, and whose nurse tells Angelo Michael might not be in such a bad way now if he had sought help when he first started forgetting things like his ATM pin, sort of like how Angelo shortly afterward forgets the password on his alarm at his New York pied-a-terre and also forgets where he put his handgun. Uh-oh. The show is based on the movie adaptation, apparently, of a Belgian novel called De Zak Alzheimer, which was the movie came out in 2003.
He's also one of the most feared bounty hunters in the galaxy.
Ed Whitmore, British screenwriter whose credits include Waking the Dead, co-created this version with Tracy Malone, who previously wrote on Silent Witness with Whitmore. The first two episodes have aired on Fox. That is all we got access to. Let's do the Chen check-in. Dan, should our listeners watch Memory of a Killer?
I'm going to say yes.
All right, Sarah.
Regardless of the dump in Bay Ridge shout out, that's a no for me, dog.
Dave.
I'm going to say it's a no on this side.
No, thank you for me as well. Let's get into it. Dan, you watched Patrick Dempsey being sexy and confident on Grey's Anatomy for many seasons. How unsettling is it for you to see him play a character who's doing the opposite of preserving life?
Honestly, he's giving very much the same vibes. Like, he's this super arrogant guy who knows he's better than everyone else and gets himself in a lot of trouble because of it. It's not that much different, you know? And honestly, if at some point Meredith Grey had been killed off, I think he very well could have become this guy. If you told me McDreamy actually was an assassin in his spare time, I'd believe you. It totally fits.
What did you most like about the show? Let's start there because the rest of us were, as you just heard, against.
So, look, this show is a lot. I mean, it reminded me a lot of the end of Goodfellas with Henry Hill's very, very bad day. Like, every possible thing that could go wrong is going wrong at the exact same time. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot happening. But it is a strong concept. I think it would be a stronger concept for a movie than it is for an ongoing TV show where we've got to stretch this out network for 5 years and 100 episodes, I guess.
Yeah.
And you see in the first episode, they hit the memory stuff really hard. In the second episode, they kind of forget that's happening because I think they realize they kept on hitting hard. This would be a 3-hour show and it'd be like the last season of Wallander and nobody wants that. Mm-hmm. So I do think there's a lot going on. There's enough little intricacies going on. I do like that the family dynamics seem relatively realistic. I mean, on the bad dad, soccer dad continuum, he's on the soccer dad side, but also his son-in-law is a drip and he doesn't like him. And, you know, I like the family relationships. Again, too much is going on. It's overstuffed, but I found it entertaining. The action sequences are pretty good. I like seeing McDreamy kill people. So it worked for me.
Dave, you are canonically the most forgetful member of this panel. What were your feelings about this representation of your lived experience of being someone who frequently leaves his gun in the fridge instead of the wall safe?
Right. Well, first of all, I don't recall being the most forgetful person on the panel.
Nice.
I was trying to recall one word for 2 days last week. I just couldn't, like, my brain wouldn't conjure up the word. And it, like, 2 days later, I'm like, oh, yeah, rescind. That was the word I was looking for. I was like, revoke. And I was like, oh, all over the place. My brain's spotty.
It's so
like,
close to raisin. Coincidence? I don't think so.
So what was the question? Do you actually forget?
Yeah. You're doing a bit.
No.
How did you feel about this representation of memory loss? Especially when one of the things that the nurse mentions is like, you know, forgetting where you left your keys. Yeah. Sort of like how you've left your keys in our car overnight several times.
Look, I would have liked the show a lot better if it was just the hitmen who did things, frankly. I don't think I need the Alzheimer's sweetener for this show. I didn't really find it particularly effective or really doing anything to the, you know, the machinations of the hitman on his day. Like, literally in the first couple episodes, it really is just, I lost my keys. I forgot the code to my apartment building. And oh yeah, I left my gun in the fridge. I got a cold gun now, which reminded me of Miami Blues, which made me just want to watch Miami Blues again. Mm-hmm. I just found the whole tricksy conceit kind of a non-value add. I just didn't really, that part didn't grab me. So when it came to that, especially when he's visiting his brother for his one-sided chat, so I'm like, all right, I don't really need this. This is just therapy without the therapist. It's those scenes. And you know how I hate that.
Yeah.
But I liked him I like the idea of him being sort of a hitman and being cold as ice, although I don't know if the betrayal really hit that, but I was excited for that part of it. Didn't quite deliver.
Yeah. In terms of the Trixie part, I thought this was going to be more of like a Mr. Robot situation where we can't trust the narrative as it's portrayed.
Yeah.
And there is a little of that, but Sarah, as someone who watched Mr. Robot a lot, could this one have gone further with a POV character whose vision of reality may be unreliable for the audience?
In theory, yes. In practice, you're on a network, and I think that that constrains you. Groundhog Day of the Jackal or Hour of the Jackal. Like
30 Days of the Condor.
Yeah. Like, I mean, this is the issue, I think, in chief, is that it's on a network. But at the same time, like, you look at the cast, like Peter Gaddio from Yellow Jackets, Gina Torres shows up eventually, Michael Imperioli, food guy. Mm-hmm. They have all the tools, I think, but I agree that it didn't necessarily need the Alzheimer's aspect. I think it probably should have been a feature, so I agree with that too. But the pushing the sort of reliability of the narrator would have been at least a little bit fresh or not quite so noted by the network. Mm-hmm. And that's not what we got. We got these like lingering shots of with like psycho strings when he's paused over the last three numbers of his pin. And it's like, we already looked the show up. We fucking get it. Like, get on with it. Mm-hmm. Into the food factory.
I gotta say, what was really effective for me about this is essentially a superhero narrative. He's got a secret identity,
yeah,
and he's not able to maintain it. And of course, as he's losing his mind, he's going to be less able to maintain that secret identity. And it's more like superhero narratives. That I think that element of it really worked, as he's like frantically trying to, you know, keep all his, you know, juggle everything, keep all his balls in the air. And it's obviously eventually not going to work. And that's, you know, it's very John Wick-y. Mm-hmm. You know, that like there's this mm-hmm. somehow infrastructure for super assassins all over the place and middle-aged guys, you know, are doing it. But, you know, look, there's a place for John Wickiness. And I, you know, I'm a little tired of that. But, you know, I like the actor. So it worked out for me.
I said to Tara during the time, especially because the episodes feature a lot him taking his shitty little domestic car out to the country to his totally not CG abandoned gas station out in the sticks. And then he trades it in for his Killmobile, which is his Porsche. And that whole thing just made me think, like, this could have been like one of those Dark Knight Returns, I'm old Batman stories, where it's just Batman going senile and he has to go in and out of his Batcave and get the Batmobile. And then he like forgets which supervillain he's supposed to pummel his head in. It just felt like that. And I was like, I think I would have watched the Gotham version of this, mm-hmm. but I don't want to watch the McDreamy version of this.
Yeah. I mean, I like that idea, but alas, this is what we have. And I also was not a Grey's watcher, have never been, and I'm not especially invested in Dempsey. Like, he doesn't do it for me. Imperioli would be higher up on the list for me, frankly. I like Big Schnoz.
Michael Imperioli plays like a mid-level mob boss, it feels like.
He's like his assignment editor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's obviously doing well. He is bumping off rival mob bosses. So he's at that level of decision making. So he's up there. Why is a mob boss, do you do all the mob bossing only to spend your time cooking in a kitchen?
Because it's your joy.
No, Dave, have you seen Goodfellas? You got to slice the garlic the right way.
I know how to slice the garlic, Dan.
No, an aristocrat.
Yeah, I was thrown by Patrick Dempsey, Irish-American, playing Angelo, and Michael Imperioli, Italian-American, playing Dutch.
It's a rich tapestry, Tara.
I guess. Mm-hmm. Can we agree, though, that ruining his surprise party like Angelo does in the second episode is one of the worst offenses against the social contract that a person can commit?
Dick move, but also, these people are all heavily armed. Don't surprise heavily armed people in general. I think it's a bad idea to throw your mob boss, you know, father a surprise party.
But if you're having a surprise party in a restaurant, you definitely have backdoor access. And that's where you tell all your guests to come in through the alley, you know, on the side street, so that you don't meet the birthday boy in front of the restaurant.
True.
Now, I will say one thing this show did that made me feel very seen was the explanation of how grants work, because his son-in-law, his loser son-in-law, gets a grant for $3,000. And he's looking at his daughter like, really, this loser? And said, oh, good, you can buy diapers. And he's like, no, I can't use it. And I'm just like, I've been there where it's like, oh, I got a $1.5 million grant. They go, wow, what are you going to buy? I'm like, I'm going to pay teaching assistants. I don't actually get the money. I'm sorry. I don't get. So I was happy to see representation for people get grants.
Jesus.
That feels like a fine place to end.
Sure. Just as an aside, which alternate of my titles would you prefer for this show? Low Potential, The Hitman Who Couldn't Remember, GOAT, Greatest of Alzheimer's Triggermen, or finally, the day, the afternoon of the Jackal? Question mark.
I like GOAT.
How about the sundowning of the Jackal?
Oh, yes.
There it is. Workshopped.
Got a lot of shows. It's a great time for shows.
It's back.
We rotate them.
It is.
All right. It is time for Around the Dial, as you just heard. Our first up, as always, to tell us about what she's watching on TV is Tara.
Hello. I watched The Beauty, and of all of the Ryan Murphy shows I have ever watched, I think this is the one I can describe most succinctly. There is a virus that turns people hot and then makes them blow up. There's, for real, that's what it's about.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wait, how do they blow up?
Their temperature rises and they can't regulate it. They're in the cold open, we see Bella Hadid not playing herself, but playing a model, like going ham in a French restaurant, just sucking down as much water as she can. And then she runs out into the street and she blows up.
But like, does she explode or does she like inflate like thunder from Big Trouble in Little China?
No, she blows apart in lots of little pieces.
All right.
Mm-hmm. When they reassemble them kind of in the morgue, they're still steaming because she's still that hot.
Cut it with a social commentary.
Ew.
It's also a sexually transmitted virus. So if you have sex with someone who is infected or a carrier, it also turns you hot. But then you might explode later.
Yeah, but won't the hot people just stick to the hot people after they turn hot?
Well, they all become models, so kind of.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm just saying, how's a lonely nerd get beautified in this situation?
That's what happens in the pilot. That's truly what happens. There's
okay,
an incel.
But wait, how many characters in The Beauty are food objects in this universe? That's the question I want to ask here. I assume this is a food sausage party crossover.
No, I wish. So what we don't know at this point, there's only been three episodes, is how the virus got started. But based on trailers for the season, it seems like a shot, like an injection is involved, and that a character played by Ashton Kutcher is behind it, which is curious timing, given that the other recent horror story about taking a shortcut to hotness that turns out to be terrible actually was The Substance, starring his ex-wife Demi Moore. But at this point in culture, years into the existence of Ozempic and other weight loss drugs, it's not that hard to entangle the metaphor of a shot that can make you conform to prevailing beauty standards, but that does not cure the insecurities that made you take it in the first place. But because it is coming from Ryan Murphy, the way it read to me was someone might look hot, but they could still be unattractive on the inside. And for those people who came by their hotness the easy way, there can be no peace. So anyway.
Wow.
Feels like American Horror Story : hot virus, and only you know whether that is something you care to see or not. I tapped out on Grotesquerie, which is like another version of American Horror Story to me, after less than two episodes.
Is that the one where they're hot, but they implode?
No. So far, this is more watchable than that, than Grotesquerie was. You can also just watch the American Horror Stories episode Tapeworm from 2023 to get the same basic concept delivered in under an hour. Not for me.
I would also say you could just read the comic book, which is like five issues long. It'll take you 20 minutes.
Oh, it's based on a comic book? I didn't even know
it's
that.
It's based on a comic book, yeah.
All right. Great.
Or you can watch that one episode of The Twilight Zone. Knock it out in half an hour.
For my plug, I'm going to recommend Community Aid Network in Minnesota. They do mutual aid work in the city, in Minneapolis and elsewhere, much like the group that I work with here. And just because Greg Bovino is leaving does not mean the problems don't persist. So we'll link you that in the show notes if you want to support their work.
All right, Dan, what do you got for us?
All right, so first I want to do a quick British cozy mystery update. I'm the one here who watches these. So a couple of these real quick. Number one, Shetland. We are now in series 11. This is the third series of the Agatha Raisin era after the original guy left and they brought Agatha Raisin in to be the new detective. We still have not seen any of the ponies. How do you have a show set in Shetland with no ponies, 11 series, we're still holding out.
Yeah, that is sloppy.
It took Nashville 911 three episodes to get to the hot chicken crisis.
That's true. It did.
They know what they're doing.
Midsommar Murders is now in series 26. It has jumped the shark about 15 years ago, but they are still making them. And I choose to believe that they are now being as intentionally ridiculous as possible. Series 26, episode 3 has a Bitcoin broing godly buzzard killed by a cuckoo clock with a spring wound to a murderous degree.
Dan, stop it.
They have
just
to know what they're
now.
Doing.
Yeah.
You know what you're getting. The initial brief from Midsommar Murders, like, what if the detective is middle-aged and he's horny? And that's, you know, there's some room for that, but it's been 25 years. They've replaced the guy, I think, twice now. If you like it, you like it. Agatha Christie's Seven Dials is on Netflix. We got the Agatha Christie license. It is on Netflix. They brought in the former showrunner of Doctor Who to do a Agatha Christie. So it got real dumb. The outfits aren't even that great. And the lead, Mia Sasha McKenna Bruce, you'll be shocked to know she's British aristocracy, has the most Instagram face I've ever seen. Like, this is a woman who's been on Instagram. You cannot cast her in the 30s. Her outfits weren't even good. I don't know what the point is. However, the real thing that gave me joy over the holiday break was a show called Anatomy of a Moment. This stars the professor from Money Heist as Adolfo Suarez. And this is about the 1981 coup that ended Franco's rule in Spain. So I had to fly to Spain to watch it. It's very, very well done. It's winning tons of awards. I imagine it'll be available on an American streaming platform and in English before too long. This is not available. I can recommend the same creators who have another award-winning series called The Plague or La Peste. Two seasons of this from 2018. BBC did an English translation of it, so you can actually get it, or some enterprising folks have put it online and you can find it on YouTube. This is a very cool show. It's set in 1580 Seville. So Seville is where all of the wealth from the New World is coming into Spain. So it's economically really, really important. And they discovered that the Black Death is starting up there. And so, but of course, no one actually wants to shut it down because that would be a lot of money if they actually shut down Seville. So they're going to keep it contained, we promise. And, you know, of course, if you know Spanish history, that's not going to happen. Then, of course, we've got a guy who has to sneak into Seville in order to find somebody else, in order to find a child. And what's great about it is that that's your plot going into it. And that gets resolved in like the first episode. It then moves on to something completely different. Gets very strong Name of the Rose vibes. Great production design. Doesn't go where you expect. And has all these great little processy details about the largely orphan-based economy of Seville in the 16th century. Very cool. Two seasons you can watch on YouTube.
Any question about that? Any tightly wound cuckoo clocks in The Plague?
No. I will say there is one moment in the first episode that made me like literally gasp. Like, oh my, I cannot believe they're doing that. Holy. Right. Yeah. So there is some sex position, very Game of Thrones inspired, and some shocking acts of violence in there.
All right.
For my plug, I do have a new book out. My new book's called Bitcoin Bros. Cryptocurrency Masculinity and the Future of Men, out from Bloomsbury. This is the first book I've ever written where the publisher thinks like normies are going to want to read this one. I don't see it, but if I knew what sold, I probably would have larger royalty checks. So it's very good. I'm proud of it. It is out at all good booksellers now.
I just want to say I pitched Dan for the title. He rejected it, but it was called Bitcoins Put Hair on Your Chest, but he said no.
Bitcoin, of course, if you ask Amy Sugarman from 90210MG, is the money that's not money.
It's not wrong. All right, Sarah, what do you got?
Disreputable booksellers, Arity Bunting here. This docuseries, Wrestlers, that I'm talking about today, came out on Netflix in 2023. I really do not know how I missed talking about it at the time. I am this podcast's leading Greg Whiteley completist. Whiteley is, of course, the creative mind behind the Last Chance You franchises, as well as Cheers, about which The Less, etc. As far as Wrestlers goes, if you liked the processier bits of Glow or The Wrestler starring Mickey Rourke, you will like this. If you like Whiteley's way of casting lesser-known sports teams as paths to privilege for some and found families for others, but also its commentary on how many people rely on a given sport or team to lift them or keep the lights on, this is also that. Wrestlers is about a crossroads for OVW, or Ohio Valley Wrestling, a third-tier, I guess, professional wrestling outfit that has broken a number of wrestlers who are now household names, including The Miz and John Cena, and has functioned as a minor league of sorts to WWE for years. When viewers join the fray, two new co-owners have teamed up with current, quote, showrunner and former wrestler Al Snow, with an eye to getting OVW out of the red by the end of a summer of live touring. That is the overarching story of the season. Along the way, there's mother-daughter shit getting worked out in the ring. There's learning how to direct a segment during a live show when literally all of your communication to the stage has gone out. and which level of spray tan is ideal. Nalibu Double Dark is evidently a shade too far. Like previous Whiteley projects, Wrestlers is informative. It has texture. It doesn't condescend to working class people. It does have somewhat predictable rhythms, and certain buried leads are easily uncovered if you've ever seen a documentary before. But it's well made, and if you want to learn more about props craft, i.e. when a table can't be credibly scored to break in the ring properly and you have to rewrite the entire scene, Wrestlers is solid. Speaking of solid, supporting Minneapolitan bookshops is a solid thing to do at this time in our nation's and globe's history. There will be a link in the show notes from minneapolis.org. And Exhibit B has a winter sale on compendia and crimoires, all 20% off through Valentine's Day. The cart does the math. ExhibitBbooks.com.
All right, I got one more for you. John's sick.
Nice.
Okay. Here's what's coming up on the Extra Hot Great Cinematic Universe in the week ahead. This Friday on Extra Extra Hot Great for Club members, we'll be talking about Wonder Man, as Tara said. Go to the club page, that is extrahotgreat.com/club for more information and to sign up, and then come back here next week. 1 week's time, EHG Prime. We'll be talking about the Muppet Show anniversary special with Adam Grossworth. Of course, it's Adam Grossworth. So 1 week's time, be here or regret it.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon presenting this week. It's Emily May who's bringing us Crash Landing on You, Season 1, Episode 12.
Hi, Extra Hot Great. To catch you up on the premise of the series, we first meet Yun Sari as a socialite and high-powered CEO of her own fashion company in Seoul. Everything is looking up as Sari is about to take over her father's business conglomerate. Then Crash Landing quickly brings us to our bonkers premise. Personally testing her company's new extreme sportswear line while paragliding, Sari is suddenly thrown off course, encountering a tornado. She's landed in the demilitarized zone and, taking several wrong turns, crash lands into life in North Korea. The first half of the series follows Sari becoming entangled with the army captain Ri Jong-hyuk, who initially finds her and is then tasked with protecting her and hiding her true identity while trying to get her back to the South. And of course, she falls in love with the aforementioned Captain Ri Jong-hyuk, who initially seems cold, stoic, and immune to her charms. The main draw of Crash Landing is watching this love story unfold with incredible chemistry between the leads. Crash Landing on You is many things: a romance, a drama about succession in a family business, an action-packed army and espionage story, and a fish-out-of-water comedy. However, the brilliance of Crash Landing is that it pulls a double reverse fish-out-of-water story halfway through, which is why I believe Episode 12 is a standout candidate for entry into the canon. After many trials and tribulations, Yun Sari is finally able to return to South Korea, but we learn that an evil North Korean army general running a criminal ring has escaped to the South and is hunting her down. He's then followed by Captain Ri, who has gone rogue and come to Seoul to protect Sari. And if that wasn't enough, the troop of army comrades have subsequently been charged with their own secret mission to enter South Korea, find Captain Ri, and return him safely back to the North. So after seeing Sari adjust to life in North Korea with its failing electrical grid, wiretaps, and random police inspections, we now see the North Korean characters adjust to the capitalist excesses and technological marvels of the South. Episode 12, with its over 97-minute runtime, has a lot of dominoes that were previously set up get to be knocked down in a really satisfying way. The episode begins with Sari being actively hunted by the evil army general and narrowly escaping as Jong-hyuk acts as her bodyguard. She then goes to meet with a group of gang members in an unsavory part of Seoul, and as a negotiating tactic, buys their buildings and offers free rent in exchange for intel. While it's hard to create a millionaire CEO protagonist who is also sympathetic to viewers, I personally have to stand this rent-forgiving queen. She continues using her wealth and power for good by rehiring her insurance agent, who pursued the long ongoing search when she disappeared paragliding. And later, she gives all her employees bonuses. Meanwhile, the army boys are roaming Seoul looking for Suri and Jonghyuk. Staying at a sauna overnight, they each describe what they've been doing that day as we, the audience, see a series of close calls where they just miss finally finding their captain and friend. So the first domino to be knocked down is the setup of each army comrade's specific character or skills, and then seeing how it's applied to life in the South. Overall, setting these characters up to adapt in this new world with the skills and personalities we already know them for is a good bit of business, and it shows their camaraderie. As a second domino, we see some progress in the secondary, not quite love story between the counterpoint or foil of each of the leads. Dan is Jonghyuk's fiance through a kind of arranged marriage and has gotten entangled with the South Korean con man going by the name Alberto, hiding out in North Korea while he's on the run. Dunn shows a surprisingly human and caring side, making porridge for an ailing Alberto, who then confesses the truth of his long con on the Yun family. Meanwhile, Jonghyuk and Suri share a sweet, soju-fueled moment, imagining what their lives would be like if Jonghyuk could stay in the South forever. These scenes present a juxtaposition of the two couples who are each having a drunken night together and ultimately reveals how they're unexpectedly suited to each other. A third domino that falls is the big reveal in this episode of the origin of Suri's strained relationship with her mom and her own family, a darkness in her past that was only hinted at previously. This is also played in emotional juxtaposition and heightens the relationship with Suri's new found family and the love she shows for the army boys as her surrogate brothers. Finally, one of my favorite parts of the series is a feature of its structure. It always closes with a Rashomon-esque scene, which serves to revisit or extend a previous point in the episode to provide a new perspective. In this case, Jonghyuk discovers how he and Suri have crossed paths before, in Switzerland, years ago, and that he has saved her more than once. This is the last domino falling, emphasizing that their love is as fated as it appears doomed, transcending time and space. Episode 12 demonstrates how Crash Landing on You is a love story in multiple dimensions. The central romance between star-crossed lovers reflects back to the audience another story of unrequited love in two nations torn apart. Both stories build around the idea of yearning to once again be reunited. This episode therefore highlights how the silliness of the premise serves a larger purpose, as the characters discover, through juxtaposition with their unlikely North or South counterparts, what's missing the most in their own lives. And, minor spoiler alert, while their love remains largely unrequited in the end, the series sticks the landing with a long view on what Jonghyuk and Suri can achieve with political borders keeping them apart. With that, I hope my pitch has convinced you and that this episode can take the unlikely tornado-driven course to crash land its way into the canon. Thank you.
Thank you, Emily May. Dan, you chose this from the list of submissions. Please start us off.
Sure. So I was excited to look for a show. I had no idea what I was getting in for. And there's some elements of this show I really liked. So I appreciate the presentation, putting this in context. And the parts of the show I really liked were when they took us into North Korea and we saw kind of the community building aspects of North Korea. I thought that was very sweet. I thought that was interesting. I liked that part. And the whole time I'm watching it, I thought, I think I would have liked this episode better if we were seeing what was happening in North Korea, like seeing the capitalists in North Korea rather than the reverse. There's a subgenre of books about like the end of Eastern Europe, the end of communist Eastern Europe. Jenny Erpenbeck's written good books on this. You know, where you bring people from these very closed societies into capital societies, and they are astounded by the glamour and the plenty, but also you know, the Jenny Erpenbeck talks about, oh, she saw a homeless person first time and is baffled by the idea of like, wait, why is anyone helping this person? What the hell is wrong with you people? Why are, what are you not human? What's going on? So I think there's a lot of potential there to explore what's going on. And unfortunately, this episode was doing the opposite, where we were getting what was happening in South Korea. And it wasn't played for anything but laughs, really. I mean, the idea everyone just comes to South Korea and they just start playing video games. And I guess being better than I am at multiplayer games immediately when they get to South Korea, because I'm getting my butt kicked in Street Fighter by 12-year-old South Koreans. Apparently, this is just in the water. Anyone shows up can do this. And I think that the fact we're looking at that rather than the reverse, I think harmed a little bit for me. It also had a lot of tonal shifts that I really normally associate with French media or Indian media, where they're doing everything. We've got espionage, we've got melodrama, we've got comedy. You know, we're doing vaudeville over here. They're just doing everything. You know, that's very different than what we get in American shows, where it really is just one genre. I can appreciate it, but I don't think it worked together as well as I would have liked. I thought the comedy bits largely fell flat. I mean, it just seemed like we were extending reality past where I thought it was going to go. And I understand in a romance novel, the idea that we showed these are star-crossed lovers, they were fated to be together, they met years ago without knowing it, you know, that's a reveal that was meaningful for people who've been watching the whole series. But for just coming into that, I was rolling my eyes like, really? Okay, come on. So maybe I'm not the best person to judge this. This is not my genre. This is not a whole format of TV I'm familiar with, but I wasn't terribly impressed by it.
I'll go next. I agree. And we accidentally, my mistake, watched the wrong episode first. So we watched the second episode, which is more of, Dan, what you're saying you wish you had seen here, which is Suri in North Korea, like discovering what life is like there, being amazed, like doesn't have a stove, doesn't have the internet, doesn't, you know, all the things that he is lacking that she takes for granted in South Korea.
The kimchi cellar,
which mm-hmm. turns out to be a plot point we see in episode 12. I might have been closer to voting it in if Emily May had pitched episode 2. The comedy is too gentle for my preferences. And when Emily May says that the leads have amazing chemistry, it's like, I don't really see it in either of these episodes, to be honest. And all of the times that we step away from the main story to deal with this other guy in North Korea, the Alberto, the con man, or all the business with her family, it's like, it's just too much. The focus is so scattered that there's nothing to land on. And then when you consider that the episodes are also an hour and a half, it's like, surely you could have excised one of these storylines. It is, to me, it is really trying to do too much. And I also have to say, the look of it is so unappealing. The lighting of it, it looks like it's a detergent commercial. Like it's so, it's so bright and strange. The exception being, again, in episode 2, when we were in the village, where it seemed like as if those are real places that people really live. But every time we're in, you know, in Suri's story or in her apartment in the second episode, it just feels, it looks like a commercial. So this is my first contact with a K-drama. The only other Korean show that we've watched of this ilk was probably Chicken Nugget, which was much, much more straight ahead. It wasn't a drama. It was just, you know, a goofy sci-fi comedy. I don't see what Emily May is seeing here, personally.
Tara, one quick question. So one thing I found out, I looked up the show a little bit, and I saw that this show was denounced by the governments of both South Korea and North Korea. And I was surprised, like, this thing, this is what you're upset about? Like,
No, Dan, this is what we're unified on.
But that to me feels like
whatever it takes.
If the governments of Canada and the U.S. both came out against When Calls the Heart, it's like, this is so, this is such a soft target. Just leave people be. Anyway, Dave.
We've got the greatest minds in both our countries trying to figure out when the hell When Calls the Heart takes place. And we haven't been able to do it.
Oh.
Yeah, I agree. I found this overstuffed, and the parts that were supposed to be the K-dramaiest, the, you know, will they, won't they, star-crossed lovers on either side of a border stuff didn't really click for me. I did also enjoy the second episode much more than the 12th episode for the reasons why, which is I love just being plopped into a small corner of a universe I don't know. And then you really just get into how these people live.
She's even learning like new slang and stuff. That's part of sort of the transformative aspect of her story. Like all of that is more interesting to me. Sorry, go ahead.
And then you can see subtitles in Korean during while they're talking about Korean. And those are North Korean idioms that are being translated for a South Korean Canadian audience, which I thought was also interesting that there was that many of them, because there was quite a few in the second episode anyways. If Memories of a Killer was a superhero origin story, this is another princess in troubled times story. You know, her father's kingdom has fallen. She now is forced to live in enemy territory, and she falls in love with the prince of the evil kingdom and then finally brings them over. And it's like, yeah, it's a double fish out of water thing, but it's also just Crocodile Dundee 1 and Crocodile Dundee 2. There was little parts that I enjoyed here and there to extend that metaphor. The court jesters, the North Korean soldiers that are sort of attached to the lead, you know, they have cute little moments in 12, but they all take too long and they're all very broad. One guy accidentally falls into a valet chicken delivery job. One guy, the funniest part is the one really good looking North Korean soldier is outside in his new South Korean duds, and has all these people coming up to him, giving him their business cards, saying they're from the agency, and he's freaking out, not knowing that they're from model agencies, and he's just that good looking. They want to hire him off the street. So a couple cute moments like that, but 90 plus minutes for this. No, did not need that amount of time. So it was just like too much. They were doing too much, and there was too much of it. So.
Yeah, I think this needed to either be a feature that sort of focused a little more tightly for 2 hours or an hour and 45 minutes on, let's just play this out. What would actually happen if this happened? Or given that it was like way too many storylines for even this runtime, which if they had cut out the quote comedy bits, maybe you could get that under control. But like this had the vibe. And honestly, as Tara mentioned, the look of a soap opera, just like really overlit. It looked like some things were expensive. Some things were really cheap looking. The humor is like not really their strength, I would say. Soap operas, I mean. And then they try it and you're like, all right, whatever. But you're just like filling time in the, let's say, Thursday episodes so that you can get to the cliffhanger. And so we have to do some wah wah about someone's wedding planning. Like if you're familiar with daytime drama in the States, you've seen this a million times. I assume it's still happening on General Hospital, like literally right now as we're recording this. But for this, which is supposed to, like, it's a romantic comedy drama, like, because of the romantic, which was not entirely convincing to me either, chemistry-wise, and the comedy, which was so gentle as to be flavorless, as Tara said, then you're, like, having to get through all of that to get to the drama, which could have been interesting, but I think this is just the, like, grab bag nature of this kind of show, and it's not really necessarily fair to be like, why isn't this counterpart in Korea? But why isn't this counterpart in Korea? I would watch the shit out of that. And I know Dave would too. So
yeah, sure.
I enjoyed the presentation. And I think maybe if we'd watched from the beginning, we'd be more pro. But I, for one, just kind of didn't really understand what anyone was doing here.
Yeah. I mean, speaking to your point of it being a feature, this literally could have been Crocodile Dundee 1 and 2. The first half of this is her in North Korea. And then right at the end, there's like, guess what? We're going to Seoul. Credits.
Yeah.
And then we can have a Crashing Into You part 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To go back to your princess analogy, the comedy guys, it's sort of like Snow White and the five North Korean soldiers.
Yeah.
There's that too.
Yeah, like I think one of them actually says Beru at one point, and it's like, well, that's the level that you're operating on. It's not fair to assess it on other levels of things that it isn't, but alas, here we all are about to vote.
Question for the meat eaters here. Big plate of Korean fried chicken in front of you right now. How hard are you going to town?
Oh, that fried chicken looked really good. I would eat that.
Yeah, it did.
We go to H Mart to get that stuff all the time. It's fantastic. Sure.
All right, let's put this to the official vote. Dan Cassino, what say you? Canon worthy or not?
I very much appreciate the presentation. I like that I was exposed to something different, but I have to go no on that dog.
All right, Tara Ariano. On that K-dog?
I agree with Dan all the way down the line, but thank you for the submission, Emily May.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Good presentation, as everybody said, and interesting to think about, but alas, no from me.
And I'm going to say no too. So unfortunately, that means Crash Landing on You, Season 1, Episode 12, you are hereby not inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right. It is time for winner and loser of the week. Sarah has this week's winner.
I do. It's Jordan Belfort, who's getting a docuseries, The Real Wolf of Wall Street, Paramount Plus. That movie was or felt roll long as it is. So didn't he already have a docudrama of docuseries length? And also, guess Paramount Plus isn't as worried that Belfort is going to sue them as they are that the Ramsey family will, because that project is still drifting around turnaround somewhere.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. If these people had the courage of their convictions, that would be a show about an actual wolf running around Wall Street. All right, Tara, who is our loser of the week?
Michael Rapaport. He was, spoiler, bounced from The Traitors. I unfortunately had to tell my sister, who was really enjoying him on that show, that he's a bad person in real life. But anyway, now he is threatening to skip the season 4 reunion. And I understand the impulse. You don't think you're going to get a fair shake because you probably won't. But on the other hand, if you sign up to do the show, you sign up to do the show and the reunion is part of it. And if you don't, you're just going to look like a little bitch. So keep that in mind, Michael Rapaport, before you piss away what tiny amount of public goodwill there still is for you.
All right. Well, speaking about pissing away goodwill, do you know what time it is?
And looking like a little bitch. It's game time.
It's non-regulation Dan Casino-led game time.
Thank you all for having me. And of course, when I'm coming and visiting, you know, you have to bring a host present. My present, of course, is a game that we, so Dave can play, because Dave is very good at these things. He doesn't get to show off as much.
Thanks, Dave.
Today we're going to play a game called Some Bangers, All MASH. And this is a before and after style game. The first round, you'll be guessing the name of a mashed up TV show from the description of the show, before and after style. To make it a little bit easier, at least one of the shows in the mashup will have premiered in 2024, 2025, or 2026. Mm-hmm. And the order of the clue will tip you off as to the order of the mashed up title. You'll get 2 points for a correct answer or 1 point after a clue, and you get just one stab at it, Sarah D. Bunting.
Thank you, sir.
Could we have Picky give us an order, please?
No.
We will start with Sarah.
I really got to move that one out of the way, which I have done. Okay, here we go.
All right, let's go
with
Sarah, Dave, Tara, okay. Then. All right, so our first question will be for Sarah. An underfunded emergency room faces influx of patients after a series of incidents involving a demonic force that preys on children. So what is the mashed up title we're talking about here?
The Pit, Welcome to Derry?
Oh, yes.
Nice.
Absolutely. The Pit, Welcome to Derry. All right, Dave, a surgeon who really should not be doing neck surgery on anybody winds up in the limelight when he's tasked with treating the ailing President Garfield.
Oh, what was that called? It's the thing. I think this is the Joshua Jackson, here's a podcast, now make a TV show thing out of it. I think. Is it Dr. Death by Lightning? Yes.
Well done.
But that was about season 2, the one with Joshua Jackson.
Thank
you. You actually watched.
Yeah, I did. Yep.
Tara.
Yes.
An autistic man might be a great surgeon, but he is not at all ready for the medical emergencies and interpersonal shenanigans awaiting him as a ship's doctor on a luxury cruise ship.
The Good Doctor Odyssey.
All right, we got the easy ones out of the way. Now let's get to the real stuff.
Great.
Back to Sarah. A group of colorful, friendly young horses are unexpectedly thrust into the role of CIA operatives in Cold War era Moscow.
Oh, God. My little... I need a hint, I think, because I'm not sure about the second part.
Would star Emilia Clarke and a whole bunch of voice actors, including Nancy Cartwright.
My Little Pwnlimat? I don't know what this is. I'm sorry.
Dave, you want to get ghost points?
Yeah, this is My Little Pony's Friendship is Magic.
Well, My Little Pony's, Friendship is Magic, or My Little Pony's Persons of No Interest.
It's the whole lesson we learn for all those shows.
Yeah. Exactly right, yes.
Gah! I got it seconds after I gave up.
All right, Dave, this one's for you. In yet another Sherlock Holmes riff, a doctor comes to believe that the Napoleon of crime may still be alive and running a biker gang in California's Central Valley. One of these is a very, very recent TV show.
Oh, right. Yeah, I forgot we're dealing with that. Can you read it again, please?
Sure. In yet another Sherlock Holmes riff, a doctor comes to believe that the Napoleon of crime may still be alive and running a biker gang in California's Central Valley.
I can't remember what thing. It's not bookish. That doesn't feel right. He's not a doctor. It's right there in the name, Dave. Book. Doctor-ish. Health man. I'm going to need a hint, I think.
You can hint. All right. So this show would star Morris Chestnut and Charlie Hunnam.
Oh. Okay. I had the second part, Sons of Anarchy.
Well, it is a Sherlock Holmes riff.
Yeah. More. I don't know what this first show is. I'm just going to say Dr. Watts' Sons of Anarchy.
So close, Dave. The new Sherlock Holmes riff starring Morris Chestnut is just Watson. So it's Watson's of Anarchy.
Is that British or American?
It's American.
That's American.
It's American.
It's on CBS, but it's on the bubble. Has not been renewed.
Is this a elementary universe show?
I don't think so.
Sherlock Holmes was real. He was dead. And Watson has resumed his medical practice and thinks Moriarty is still alive.
Okay.
For Tara.
Yes.
This is a TV adaptation of a frequently banned Judy Blume novel about two young athletes falling in love after one of them relocates to a small town in Colorado.
Foreverwood.
It's Forever and Everwood.
Mm. Well, how come you didn't pick the guy who lives forever? Forever, isn't it? With
Foreverwood was actually the name of the series finale episode.
Horatio Homblore.
Yes, because it did not premiere in 2024, 2025, or 2026.
Keep on forgetting about that. All right, committing that to memory. Continue, Dan. Right. Sorry.
For Sarah, a Pennsylvania law professor helps her students plot the kidnapping of a rogue security android who would really rather be left alone to watch his shows.
How to Get Away with Murderbot?
How to Get Away with Murderbot. How to Get Away with Murder and Murderbot. For Dave, This is my boss, Riri Williams. She's built herself a suit of power arm, became a superhero in Chicago. She's gorgeous. This is Mr. Williams, a self-made billionaire. He's quite a guy. By the way, my name is Max. I take care of them, which ain't easy, because their hobby is murder.
Nice. Iron Heart to Heart.
That's great.
Yeah. I can see the credits right now. And right at the end, she flies through the heart.
We are all tied up.
We are.
All right. For Tara, an annoying character winds up in prison with a colorful cast of characters after his life is turned upside down when his chaotic brother shows up and threatens his successful New York City restaurant.
Orange is the New Black Rabbit? Is that what that was called? Yay.
Wow. Nice pull.
Yeah, Black Rabbit. That show with Jude Law.
Yeah, we did not watch it.
All right. For Sarah, this is a neo-noir about a bookseller who gets himself in trouble after publishing an expose about the powerful Crawley family. Remember, one of these shows is recent.
Yeah, about the powerful Crawley family.
Oh, fuck me. What was that?
Oh, God.
There is a hint available if you need it.
I'm confused about how to I'm confused. So I need a hint.
This would star Ethan Hawke and Hugh Bonneville.
Oh my God. Just that brings me to not an unhappy place. Low Downton Abbey.
The Low Downton Abbey for one. Oh, Dave, Picky has smiled upon you.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Because this is some real Starlog Jam content.
Okay, great.
A once promising quarterback who washed out gets a second chance when he uses makeup to disguise his real identity, the superpowered alien prince E-Hawk of the planet Quadris.
Fuck off. This might be getting into a deep casino territory of nerdery that I am not allowed to get into. One more time, please, because that would sound like gibberish for most of it.
I actually know this one.
No.
A once promising quarterback who washed out gets a second chance when he uses makeup to disguise his true identity as the superpowered alien prince E-Hawk of the planet Quadris.
Fuck. All right.
I do know this.
I know. What the fuck is the... Okay. Chad Powers... Power? Chad Power... Of... Kid... Chad Powers of Matthew Starr.
Yes!
Yay!
You did it.
That's for two. Yes, Chad Powers and the Powers of Matthew Starr, which ran for, I think, half a season, but is fondly remembered for being one of the worst TV shows ever made.
I honestly only know it because Sarah keeps on mentioning it every time. I only know it because Sarah knows it, basically.
Yeah, well, I'm glad thank it you, osmoted Sarah. Into 2 points.
All right, Tara. This is a spinoff of a long-running police drama in which the main characters directly address the audience as they team up with their dog to get the mail and look around for various things that they've misplaced.
I have no idea on either half. I will take a hint, please.
Would star Donnie Wahlberg and Steve Burns.
Boston Blues Clues.
Correct for one.
I couldn't follow that. I was like, Cop Rock Goes Modern Life?
First off, that's a great idea. Second off, has to be Premier lately.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, for Sarah.
Yeah.
After encountering a noble and kind of hot guy living in an underground city of outcasts, a grieving widow has the topic of her next book, investigating whether or not he killed his wife.
Can I hear the first half of it again?
Sure. After encountering a noble and kind of hot guy living in an underground city of outcasts, a grieving widow has the topic of her next book, investigating whether or not he killed his wife.
Can I have a hint, please?
Sure. This would star Linda Hamilton and Matthew Rhys.
Linda Hamilton and Matthew Rhys.
Linda Hamilton and Matthew Rhys.
Mary Riley.
Mary Riley.
Mary Riley.
Quit stalling.
I don't know the Linda Hamilton part. Oh, no. Sorry.
Dave, what is that?
Beauty and the Beast in Me.
Oh,
is correct.
Okay.
Yeah, Beauty and the Beast and the Beast in Me.
Gotcha. Oh, God, I forgot she was in that. Okay.
Dave.
Yes.
A PTSD suffering doctor who works the graveyard shift at San Antonio Memorial Hospital reluctantly takes in his estranged and newly divorced daughter, as well as his two grandsons.
Oh, God. What was the name of that hospital again?
It is San Antonio Memorial.
Oh, boy. And just read the second half for me, please.
Sure. He reluctantly takes in his estranged and newly divorced daughter, as well as his two grandsons.
I'm going to need a hint on this one, Dan.
Sure. It would star Jill Flint and Tim Allen.
I think it's a granddaughter and a grandson.
Doesn't matter.
People who watch the show are yelling at, just kidding. No, that's one true. Watches that show.
Doesn't matter to me because I don't know what this is. No, I don't know it. Sorry. Big goose egg on this one.
All right, so the PTSD suffering doctor in San Antonio, that is the night shift. You remember that was the doctors on a motorcycle?
Oh, yeah.
In the emergency room?
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah.
The show about a garage owner reluctantly taking his estranged and newly divorced daughter is the Tim Allen show, Shifting Gears. That'd be the night Shifting Gears. Also, while doing this, I found out that Going Dutch is not actually Tim Allen. That's someone else. I was very surprised. Mm-hmm. I thought Tara just really loved that new Tim Allen show.
Tim Allen stars everybody's new grandma face.
There were three shows last spring or last winter about estranged dads and daughters reconnecting. And Going Dutch and Shifting Gears were two of them. Clean Slate was the third.
All right, for Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Chinese scientists attempting to solve a devilishly difficult issue of orbital dynamics are derailed by a monstrous kid that they've just adopted.
The three-body problem child.
Problem Child, of course, being the TV adaptation of that series of movies with the head Gilbert Gottfried come back for both the animated series and was in the live action version.
I like money.
Bless him.
Again, Picky has smiled upon you. Sarah, the crew of a private charter yacht faced their biggest challenge yet. Ill-behaved 14th century nobility fleeing the Black Death.
We watched it for this podcast.
Wait, hang on.
We watched a lot of things for this podcast.
We have to panic!
Could I hear the clue again, please?
Sure. The crew of a private charter yacht faces their biggest challenge yet. Ill-behaved 14th century nobility fleeing the Black Death.
Hint.
All right, this would star Captain Lee Rosbach and Tony Hale.
That does not... Oh, okay. I remember it, but I can't... I can't pull the Below Deck Medieval Times. I can't pull the second one's name. Damn it.
It is, in fact, the Decameron. So that'd be Below Decameron.
Oh, that's good. It's good business.
Yeah, that's a pretty good piece.
All right, for Dave.
Yeah, okay.
This is a comedic mystery series about a retired man working for a PI and sent undercover into a pretentious interview show filmed at the New School.
What? Okay, one more time, please.
A comedic mystery series about a retired man working for a PI who sent undercover into a pretentious interview show filmed at the New School.
Okay, so I forget the exact title, but the first part is A Man on the Inside, I think. And the second part sounds like some tertiary Project Runway show, which, of course, I don't know the title of, but starts with Inside. So I'm going to say A Man on the Inside Project Runway.
Dave, what is your favorite curse word?
Dave has never seen a second of that show.
This show is Inside the Actor's Studio. So it's A Man on the Inside the Actor's Studio with James Lipton.
Okay.
Best known, of course, for this show and for writing the definitive dictionary of group names of animals.
Do I have my schools mixed up?
No, Parsons was also at the New School.
Yeah, okay.
But it's okay. They just fired all the humanities professors anyway. For Tara, an agnostic podcast producer marries a newly single rabbi, and together they have three children, not knowing the tragic fate that awaits them at the hands of a rogue slow cooker.
Nobody wants This Is Us.
All right, so that is 18 questions in, and time for a score break.
Okay.
Right now, Tara in the lead with 11, Dave with 6, and Sarah with 5.
Concur. I concur, Doctor.
Same.
Casino.
Right. Now we're going to move on to round 2. In this round, we're going to do infixes, the two titles we mashed up internally rather than end-to-end. This will make Dave angry, but he didn't get to approve beforehand, so ha ha ha. As before, one of the shows in the mashup will have premiered in 2024, 2025, and 2026, and the order of the clue will tip you off as to the order of the mashed up title. Let's start with Sarah. Jazz musician Johnny Domino is trying to find his feet in a fantasy world when he teams up with a weird little bald kid.
Nightman of the Seven Kingdoms?
Nightman in A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. My favorite, of course, jazz musician Johnny Domino. Here you go, Dave. A clueless British documentary host with an inexplicable love of Belgian techno anthem Pump Up the Volume walks viewers through the events occurring after the crash of a Weyland-Yutani ship coming back from space.
Wow. This is Kunk on Alien Earth. Now imagine interview questions about the xenomorphs. Okay.
Spider-Man, Easy Reader, Millie the Helper, and other educational children's characters try to investigate a conspiracy after an embarrassing incident at work.
The Electric Chair Company.
The Electric Company and the Chair Company. All right, for Sarah. For some reason, the London police need the help of a guy with a huge collection of old texts and a very on-the-nose name to figure out what happened to a theoretically fearsome bounty hunter after he got eaten by a sarlacc.
After he got eaten by a sarlacc?
As one does.
I don't know if this is going to help me, but I mean, I know half of it is bookish. I guess we'll find out. Could I have a hint, please?
Sure. Stars Mark Gatiss and Temuera Morrison.
Oh, how lovely for them.
Theoretically fearsome bounty hunter who doesn't actually ever do anything important.
The bookish of Boba Fett? I don't know. Oh, all right.
The bookish of Boba Fett.
No. I have to insist it is Book of Boba Fettish.
Ew. Do you?
Yes.
Do you have to do that?
It's just tons and tons of pages of Boba Fett and all the Kama Sutra positions. And one of them, the rocket. All right, moving on.
All right, Dave.
Yeah.
A group of castaways figures out that they've finally got a way to get home. But first they have to play an inane guessing game against a shadowy banker.
I think this is Gilligan's Deal or No Deal Island.
Absolutely right. Gilligan's Island and Deal or No Deal.
Even more unwatchable for both.
Tara, this one made me happy. This is the wacky scientific exploration focused field trips were a lot more fun before Miss Frizzle was replaced by an ahedonic romantasy author struggling against a world conquering hive mind.
The Magic School Pluribus.
Wow, that's a good one.
All right, starring, of course, Lily Tomlin and Rhea Seehorn. Sarah, an ambitious young woman feels stuck in her job at a talent agency, but her life changes when she runs into her ex-best friend, former federal prosecutor from New York, who's reinvented himself as a lawyer for LA's powerful.
I love Law & Order LA.
Sorry, the former federal prosecutor from New York who's reinvented himself as a lawyer for the powerful is Suits LA. So this would be I love Suits LA, something no one has ever said.
No, yeah. Even people who were in it did not say that. Ugh.
Dave.
Yeah.
A film stuntman moonlights as a bounty hunter amid mutants and bandits in a post-apocalyptic Los Angeles.
The Fallout guy.
Number two. Tara.
Yes.
This is an observational documentary series with lots of spin-offs, following an older woman who gets out of prison and rejoins the workforce as an attorney with a secret agenda.
I'll have a hint, please.
Starring Lee Phillips and Kathy Bates.
I don't know what the first half is. The last half is Matlock, but I don't have it. Nope.
Matt locked up or something like that?
It would be Life After Lockup, so that's Life After Matt Lockup.
Oh, of course.
All right, for Sarah.
Yeah.
If you need help, you can wire Gentleman and Gunfighter Paladin at the Carlton Hotel in San Francisco. And if he can't do the job, he'll commit ritual suicide to restore his honor and make it right.
That's so good.
Okay, this is the best one. All right. I might have to create a poster for this later.
Mm-hmm.
Could I hear the clue again, please, sure. While my mind casts back?
If you need help, you can wire Gentlemanly Gunfighter Paladin at the Carlton Hotel in San Francisco. And if he can't do the job, he'll commit ritual suicide to restore his honor and make it right.
Paladin.
I love your brain, Dan.
I don't know the actual name of the show, though. Shogun for Hire? I don't know the name of the show.
Is it Have Shogun Will Travel?
Oh, Have Shogun Will Travel. I still want the poster, though.
Wire with the Carlton Hotel, room 314. I found out that some people apparently thought Paladin's first name was Wire because it says Wire Paladin.
Oh, like, no.
All right, Dave.
Yeah.
When her mother dies, a wine distributor realizes that she's very unhappy with her life. So she hooks up with a guy from Long Island, gets herself a distinctive wardrobe, and moves to New York, where she helps cops solve baffling cases. Which is always a cry for help, honestly.
Okay, so that's one show.
Yep.
The Long Island is part of the first.
Yep.
Okay, so it's not what I thought it was. Wine distributor.
Don't get the hint, Dave.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, I guess I'll take the hint.
So this would star Amy Schumer and Carrie Preston.
Oh, Dave has no idea what that show is.
Yeah, okay. Well, I had Elspeth.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought at first, before I realized that the Long Island part of it was part of the wine clue, that it was that show you watched with Eva Longoria in Spain. I'm like, I have no way I'm going to remember. And I thought maybe it started with L because it was, you know, and I was trying to figure it out, but that's not it.
No, I don't even remember what that show was called, and I watched every episode.
Amy Schumer.
You're never going to get it.
Never going to get it, apparently.
Sorry, Dave. That show is called Life and Beth. So this is Life and Elsbeth.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
final question is for Tara.
What do you got to do?
A single mom working as a cleaner in a police station is capable of so much more, as she finds out when she accompanies an unnamed weed dealer in his rounds across New York.
High maintenance potential.
Nice.
Or high potential maintenance, either one works.
I'd watch that.
All right. So final scores. Sarah has a respectable 8. Dave comes in with 12, but our winner with 17 points, it's Tara.
Yeah, way to go, Tara.
The spread eagle.
I do have a tiebreaker, just for shits and giggles.
Okay.
So the last question was about High Potential. This is the U.S. version of a European show that premiered in 2021. It is paired up with a different show, very similar, about an autistic police archivist who helps the police solve baffling crimes. And it turns out countries can have one of those shows, but not both for some reason. Anyway, to date, how many different localized versions of that show that we in USF has High Potential, including the US and the original, have been produced? So how many different international versions of High Potential could you watch? We'll have everyone go closest to the pin wins.
Ooh, okay. Oh, sorry, I'm in. Yeah.
Everyone's good. All right, Sarah, how many versions do you think?
6.
All right, Dave.
8.
And Tara.
I also thought 6, so I'll change to 5.
All right. Well, you shouldn't have. The answer actually was 6.
Yeah.
This is in the U.S. It is high potential. In France, it's called HPI. In Slovakia, it's called Excellent Nicole. In Czechia, it's called Pripady Mimoradne Marti. In Greek, it's IQ-160. And in Hungary, it's called A Renitens.
All right.
Mm.
I'm going to take your word for that pronunciation, but I was impressed by all of that. And I think you just put that in there as a way to show off. But you
know. Yes, I'm trying to show off my Czech pronunciation. Absolutely.
Excellent, Nicole. That's a good name.
That is pretty good. All right. So today, Tara wins.
Tara.
Thank you, Dan. That was fun and a little bit enraging, as all Dan Casino games are.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, guys, that is it for this episode of Extra Hot Great. We took out a contract on... Shit, I'm sorry. Sorry, one sec. What was the name of the lead topic again?
Memory of a Killer.
Thank you. Acting! You all just fell for my hilarious bit before going around the dial with stops at The Beauty, A Knight of the Seven Dials, The Plague, and Wrestlers. Emily May's Crash Landing on You didn't quite get off the EASG Cannon Runway. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from Dan. Next up, it is Wonder Man on Extra, Extra Hot Great. Dan, quick 10 seconds on Wonder Man. What's his deal?
He is a really bad actor who is a stuntman and was on David Letterman once. It's a good comic.
Fantastic. Ooh. All right, guys, remember...
We're listening...
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
I won't let this slide, desperate effort.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Excellent, Nicole, c'est moi.
And Dr. Dan Casino.
Yeah, who ruined someone else's surprise party like that? Jesus.
I'm saying.
We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Great.
Yeah, well, we play to our strengths. Let's eat.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.